K-State's men's basketball season has come to an end. Late last week against the second-ranked Baylor Bears in the quarterfinals of the Big 12 tournament. A Wildcat has decided to enter his name into the transfer portal today. Coming up in the show as well, we're going to speak with Athletics Director Gene Taylor. Welcome into Wildcat Insider, Mitch Fortner and the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson. No John today, he's taking a personal day. It's actually been a long time since I've been able to host Wildcat Insider. I remember I was thinking about the last time I did, Wyatt, and that was right before the Liberty Bowl. It's the last time we've been in the same room to chat about the Cats. But welcome in, Wyatt. Thanks for stopping by. Are we not working here yet? Maybe I gave you the wrong microphone. Let's try this one.
Okay. I can swing this around, too.
There we go. For some reason, that one just doesn't want to work.
That is amazing. I wouldn't have guessed it had been that long, but it is good to be with you. Kind of across the glass from where I normally am, so this is a kind of a fresh feel. Excited to be with you and excited to talk about K-State athletics today.
Well, men's basketball is kind of the highlight right now because of the way they finished the season. First round of the Big 12 tournament, they thumped TCU, a great second half performance, and they build momentum going into the next round against a Baylor team that's still very solid. They're only a two-loss team going into the NCAA tournament. But you kind of felt they're maybe not performing at as high of a level as they had been during their initial start of the year before they lost to Kansas, before they had their second run in a battle with COVID-19. K-State, on the other hand, playing much better defensively. Offensively, you know, they were getting a little bit better, but they're not at a clip where they can – the points are saying they can win consistently. But, Wyatt, you were there building off that win against TCU – a tremendous performance against the Baylor Bears.
Well, you covered a lot there, and I think I would start with this. I think if you're a K-State fan, you should be proud of how this team finished after struggling through what was an agonizing 13-game losing streak. It really was most difficult to beat Oklahoma to kind of start that little run. Still sticks out and maybe always will in my mind is kind of the beginning, and it gave the guys a lot of confidence. Oklahoma was a good club, and I think that put them into a little spin. It's hard to think that they're, at that time, ranked seventh in the country, and now they're, what, an 8 or a 9 seed in the NCAA tournament. That's crazy. It's not supposed to work like that. But again, I think we saw a K-State team play really pretty good defense in the last month of the year. You're right. I think that they were better, far from accomplished, certainly, but better offensively in the late stages of the season. I think what I really appreciated most in terms of what you're talking about with the tournament, they really just dismantled TCU and frankly took the fight from them, honestly, Mitch, to be blunt about it. It was like they just shut them down and took the steam out of their engine, if you will. And then to come back a day later and have, at least from my perspective, the last Baylor moment for me was a 107-59 thumping in Waco. It's hard not to think about that going into this next matchup. And keep in mind, too, Baylor had scored 100 against the Cats here in Manhattan. So to fight them down to the last minute and a half, and actually lead at one point, albeit minuscule, lead in the second half. I really appreciated their fight, their ability to hang in there through tough times. And I think you're right too. Let's be honest. I think Baylor is a fantastic team, but they are at this moment going into the big dance playing maybe a half a tick or a tick below of what we saw in Waco or when they were here in Manhattan. But how let's say they stay there. How far does that take them out? I'm going to profess to you a ways.
Oh, yeah. And they just feel it's not that they're a bad team or anything by any means. I mean, they were once in the NCAA tournament. They just feel more vulnerable right now.
We'll
get to this later in the show, but if you ask me, like, who do you think can make the deepest run in the tournament, I'm not exactly leaning Baylor's way right now. Now, that doesn't take – I don't want to take anything away from what K-State did in that game. It just – Baylor just doesn't seem like the same team to me right now.
Yeah, well, I don't think they are necessarily. Can they be? Maybe. I think that's the thing, and we'll dive into a lot of different things here, but the thing is if you look at the league teams at the moment, those who made it, those seven that go in, you're going to have less confidence about Baylor than you had before, probably about Oklahoma than you had before. But where are you at with Texas? Where are you at with, you know, maybe an Oklahoma State that were a little bit more on the upswing? I found it a little bit odd. Tell me what you think, and we can talk about the tournament later in the show too. But I thought it was weird that West Virginia ended up a 3 and Oklahoma State was a 4 when OSU had not only beat them, but beat them twice in the last week. Again, it's the entire body of work. I appreciate that. But I don't know that anybody played any better than Oklahoma State in the last 2 to 3 weeks of the season.
I would totally agree with you on that, and yeah, we'll get to that later in the show about exactly, you know, who can make the run for the Big 12, you know, the seven teams that are dancing, who do we feel that might, you know, can make the furthest run in the tournament. That's certainly up for grabs at this point with March Madness finally being back after we didn't have it last year. Now, the theme I think John and I had after the game Thursday and into Friday was hope.
Sure.
What does K-State and what they did in the Big 12 tournament, beating TCU, and by the way, to give you kind of a perspective of just what that effort against TCU did for me, and I'll speak for Matt Walters as well, because we were doing a baseball game at the time, the second game in the two-game set against South Dakota State. Mm-hmm. We're doing online broadcast, but we're keeping up with it on with the stats, just watching the stats. And a small halftime lead where K-State hadn't scored 30 yet, all of a sudden the Cats are exploding. They're up like 20, it felt like. And John's like, what? Like, are you kidding me? Like, that kind of tells you, like, oh, we weren't expecting that, but it's a good surprise.
Yes.
It's just a boom like that offensively and pounding TCU defensively, and then losing only by 6 to Baylor, doesn't that give you a little bit of hope heading into next year?
Well, yeah. I think the short answer is certainly yes. There are going to be skeptics that have a lot of questions about the team moving forward, and I get it. That's another thing that we can probably sit here and analyze for a long, long, long time. I think you, at this moment, let's just take that segment of it and say, all things being equal, does the finish equate to at least a little bit of excitement into next year? And I think you have to say, sure. I mean, winning 4 of the last 6 and the last loss was to Baylor is not all bad.
No.
And I think we saw a team really find itself on the defensive side. So if you pick that up, say early November next year, now they won't be maybe quite that good right out of the gate because you're not going to be in midseason or late season form. But now they know what it takes. You know, they've been, and I think that's the thing that I would point out here is that they have had experience with those 7 new faces, and they have learned a lot about game preparation and what it takes to compete at the Big 12 level, what it takes to defend at the Big 12 level, and full well knowing that there's lots of room to grow offensively in this offseason. Get in the gym, work on the shot, get better. And even with that, though, In my mind, at least one thing that I take forward to from the tournament is how they attack the basket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did that against – they shot 48% against TCU. Now, it's a little tougher against Baylor. But again, I mean, they shot 40% against Baylor and held Baylor to what? Baylor shot – they shot 53%, which is excellent. But it wasn't 60 like it was before either. And I think K-State really they turned them over more. Again, I think you have to compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges here. Again, we're sitting here on one hand saying Baylor's off a little bit or, you know, a half a tick or a tick here. But I think in fairness, you also have to say K-State was up a notch or two too. So that's, for me, there is some excitement of going into next year because of the way the young guys came on. Questions about will Mike McGurl come back? And we'll talk about Antonio, but his name is in the transfer portal now, and those kind of things. So there will be some attrition, but there will be some additions too. It's going to be very fun for me to see over the next few weeks what happens and what this team is going to look like moving forward.
And a couple of things that to kind of combine the TCU and Baylor game that stood up to me of reasons why I should have some hope, and that I think is proof that this team has improved and they're growing as a young team, which a couple of young guys. First of all, Nigel Pack was hitting what I would call postseason shots. Like, yeah. Okay, so that corner three that gave K-State that first lead, that's a tough shot. I mean, he's kind of, in a way, like kind of behind the backboard, so it's a tough angle, and he hits that shot, which we expect Nigel to, you know, just take those quick threes and make them. But when your best scorer is hitting those shots, it gives you a shot to pull off a big upset. Mm-hmm. All right, when you're an underdog, that's what March Madness is all about. Now, they lose by six, but Nigel hit 11 threes in those two games. That's big. Another guy I want to bring up is Luke Kasubke. Now, he still doesn't have the shot yet, doesn't have the offensive part of the game. Teams aren't expecting him to hit the big shots. But a couple of my favorite moments of those games, especially in the Baylor game, was when Luke was playing defense.
Yes.
And Baylor's trying to drive on him, and they can't. And the whole bench just jumps up and applauds. I call it a crowd pop, but there's really no crowd, but it popped the bench.
Yes.
And that alone just showed me, okay, this team has really started to figure it out defensively.
Well, they have. And I think there's still a ways to go, but the excitement level about that should be good in my mind. Again, I think we jump around a little bit here, but I think let's talk about Dejuan for just a moment. And I think the difference with him from the TCU game to the Baylor game is night and day. In the TCU game, he was probably in that mode of maybe trying to do a little bit too much. And in the Baylor game, he was in attack mode and not thinking so much about jump shots. And the result is 15 points, 5 rebounds, an assist, and 4 steals, and good defense. Going to take that every day.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's a young team that's learning and making its way through a really difficult time. But again, there is some excitement heading into next year based on what they did. You have to be impressed with Nigel and Davion and what they did in the tournament, and to maybe just a little bit of a lesser degree, Selton. Selton was good in the tournament. He has been good for a while now on the defensive side, and he's starting to figure out what's at least a little bit better of what's a good shot and what's not, and what he's good at and what he needs work on. It's obvious he can drive right-handed. He needs to work on the left. He needs to work on the pull-up jump shot. He needs to work on the three-point shot. So there's a lot of work to be done. But I think they did prove that to themselves, not just to you and me, but to themselves, that they can compete at this level with a little bit of work, or in this case, maybe quite a bit of work between now and next November.
All right, coming up next here on Wildcat Insider, Bruce Weber, after the Baylor game, did address a rumor that had been going around the last couple of days. Also, obviously, in the Big 12 Awards, K-State wasn't honored as much as some other teams. But we're going to throw out some names, and we're going to honor some Wildcats when we come back here on Wildcat Insider. Wildcat Insider continues on News Radio KMAN. Mitch Fortner and the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson. It was after the Baylor loss in the Big 12 tournament on Thursday that Coach Weber is actually the question was initiated by John about the retirement rumors. And John brought it up, like, you know, the stress of the season, not being very successful. Had there been thoughts of retirement? And Coach Weber actually brought it up himself. There was a 24/7 sports reporter that covers Maryland. And I even tried looking up the tweet, and I couldn't find it. But he was actually the one that first put it out there that, hey, it's getting around that maybe Coach Weber might retire. I hadn't heard anything about that. I don't know about you, Wyatt, but I've never heard even a whisper about Coach Weber retiring, and I just didn't think, knowing how committed he is to K-State, how much he loves it here, that right now I guess didn't feel like it'd be the right time.
Yeah, I never really thought, and I again, the tweet was something that I never saw, but I did hear about. I felt like there was very little, if any, substance to it at all from the beginning. I just didn't think at any time, despite the issues that K-State faced this year with the losing streak and all of that, that that was even on the man's mind at all. I wouldn't speak for him in any way, shape, or form, but I just didn't think in his comments, you know, a lot of times you can tell, you know, with guys, but that was not the case here. And I think as the season wore on, and much like what we talked about in the last segment about the improvement at the very end of the season, that I think and coach has even said it, that he didn't want the season to end. I'm sure some were like, what? But I also, in the same breath, would also say, I think there's no doubt in my mind he's excited about, you know, what could potentially happen with this group for next year.
Just knowing the way Bruce Weber thinks and how much he loves the team, like I mentioned before, just the way they did improve down the stretch, won some ball games, a moral victory, you could say, against Baylor. It just like what I said earlier ago about it not feeling like it's the right time. What I mean by that is I don't think he could give up on the team. Like, because this is his team, obviously. He recruited all these guys. They're very young. He has been, obviously, a key part in building them, making them better. Wants another go at it. Wants another year to try to improve this team and prove that, hey, I did it again, guys. I'm leading this team again to an improvement and showing that, yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Well, I guess what I would say is when you look at a guy who is in his 23rd year as a head coach and 40-something as a coach overall, he's probably seen a few things in his time, including having to work with a young and inexperienced team. People probably get tired of us talking about how young the team was, but it wasn't just youth. It was youth and, what, seven new faces and dancing around COVID and injuries and those types of things that I think they dealt with all year long. It wasn't pretty. Let's be honest. I mean, you go back all the way back to the Fort Hays State loss. It you can't get a whole lot worse than that, right? I mean, everybody would say that, and yet there was a point where you would say they're not going to win again. They're going to lose out, and to their credit, they didn't do that. And I've even said on this show and others, the thing that kept me going to a degree is that you would get beat on a Tuesday or Wednesday and you'd get beat Saturday and then you'd go back in and see practice Monday or Tuesday, you really couldn't tell the results from last week. I mean, they were there, they were excited, they were happy to be there, they were ready to work, all of those kind of things. At some point, you hope the worm turns a little bit there and things get a little bit better. And fortunately, I think that is what happened.
All right, so obviously the Big 12 didn't appreciate the Cats very much when it came to the coaches True. Voting at the end of the year. They did give Mike McGurl honorable mention, but I think we should still honor some Wildcats and their efforts this season. So I threw together some player of the year type questions and just want to get your thoughts on the team wide as you're at every game. You've seen this team grow and who you think is maybe the tops of these categories. The easiest one is first, the offensive player of the year. Who was the big standout this year?
Well, I don't know if it's an easy choice necessarily, because I think if you look at just the scoring averages, you're probably going to pick Mike or Nigel, mm-hmm. right? And I think most of the time, and again, when I say most of the time, I'm including the games in which Nigel missed, and there were five of them. He missed four with COVID protocol. He missed the game at West Virginia with the eye infection. So that's five conference games he missed. I'm just kind of struggling to get to this point to say it's – people may argue with this point. But even though Nigel missed those games, I believe he was the most consistent guy, and I could make an argument for Mike too. I mean, I've got my chart here that I updated somewhat today. And as an example, think about this in terms of consistency on a team that really wasn't very consistent, right? Okay. Nigel was in double figures in 12 of his last 14 games. And Mike was in double figures in 16 of his last 21. So how do you make that call?
Yeah.
But when it's all said and done, when it's all said and done, I'm going to say Nigel, but only because of the fact that his percentages pretty much across the board were better. I mean, Mike, as an example, shot 32% from three. Nigel was 41%. 42% from the floor for Nigel, 36% for Mike. So for me, and then, again, you got to give him a lot of – I mean, Mike's a – he plays so hard, plays a ton of minutes and all of that. But at the end of the day, you know what Nigel averaged a game in terms of minutes? 33-6. That's a lot for, yeah, for a true freshman. So I'm going to say it was close, but Nigel would be the guy.
I was going to give it to Nigel as well. And the percentages part was what I was going to bring up about how with a team that struggled to shoot the basketball, he seemed to be above and beyond when it came to the guards.
And you mentioned his shooting from three in the tournament. Stan pointed this out. 11 of 15 from three in the two games. Wow.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Defensive player of the year, this could be certainly an argument as well of who would be on the top of that list.
Well, again, I'll say Mike comes to mind because I give Mike a lot of credit for the little spurt at the end, I guess I'll describe it as, because Mike has never been the most vocal guy. But he, in just the way he handles himself, you can look at that and see some leadership. And he was good with the media. He kept, you know, it's hard, man, when you're getting thumped twice a week to sit there in those Zooms and say the right thing and all of that. It gets old. It gets stale. The last thing he wants to do is do that. He wants to go out and get some shots up, but he did it. So I'll start there with Mike. And again, I'm saying a lot of good things about Mike and giving the awards to somebody else, but I'm for me, I think the guy that grew the most and has the most upside as the defender on this team, hands down, is Selton Miguel.
Selton, so there was like a kind of almost a three-way tie for me. Selton really came on late. Antonio Gordon is somebody I would throw out there as well.
Absolutely.
He slapped the floor twice. I can't remember who was in front of him when he's on defense. Like he hit, I think he hit a big shot in that game against Oklahoma, and he slapped the floor twice while Oklahoma had the ball in the front court. I was like, all right, maybe we should just focus on playing defense. But he was always the one that slapped the floor every time. I love that part of the game.
Sure.
I think I'm going to give the edge to Dejuan Gordon in this one.
He's very good.
His defensive rebounding, he was flying to the rim every time. He wanted every single rebound. I think that's pretty important. His energy, he had a lot of it on defense. Also, he was a team leader in steals.
Yes.
Not a ton, but he was top 10 in the Big 12 in steals. And I thought that was pretty important as well.
I'll add to that. I like the pick in a lot of ways. I would tell you that in terms of what he brings, another guy that plays heavy, heavy minutes. We're talking about nearly 29 minutes a game, okay? Dejuan also, think about this for a 6'4 wing. He was in double figures in rebounding five times this year and had five rebounds or more 15 times in the 25 games that he played. That's effort, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can say what you want about his ability to shoot the ball or lack thereof or his percentage or whatever, but I don't know that anybody questions how hard he tries to play on defense. So I have no problem with your choice of Dejuan.
Who surprised you the most this year?
Davion.
Yeah, that's my answer too.
Yeah, and only because when I first saw him, you learn over the course of time that, you know, sometimes you hear this guy is, you know, 6'8 and a half, 6'9 and 250 pounds. And when he shows up, he's 6'7 and 225. You know what I'm saying? There's some disparity there from time to time. But the way he got into game shape and the time that he spent in the gym extra, It's hard to explain with him because I love his work ethic. I like his personality a lot. He wants to be good. He enjoys being there and the process of it. And I think for a first-year player, his success was pretty high level. It is hard playing in this league, period, end of story. But a big in this league, and you're going up again. Think about how well he played against Derek Culver, even though K-State lost the game. I'm just being honest. He outplayed Derek Culver that day in Morgantown. He did. That's hard to do. Derek Culver, for those who don't know, is about 6'11 and about 255 and led the league in double-doubles. He can play. So I think, having said all of that, trust me when I tell you his best basketball is ahead of him.
Oh, yeah. I told John before the season, if Davion Bradford's not the surprise, the five position is probably not in very good shape.
Yeah.
And I'm loving the upside of Davion Bradford. I love his hands.
Yeah.
I think he has great hands.
He does have great hands. And that's the thing, too. Keep in mind, once Casey got hurt, he played off the bench in the first four games and just was an okay factor and then started 25 straight times. And in a really good league that's considered the best, second best in college basketball this year, 8.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, shoots 62%. And this is a kid that Bruce Weber said couldn't make free throws in high school. We're talking in the high 30 percentile range.
He had to work on it.
He did. And he was 6 of 8 against Baylor. He was 43 of 73 for the year. That's 59%. He'd be the first to tell you he's got a ways to go. I just don't think most people realize where he started from and where he ended. Think about shooting 59% from the line and 62 from the field. But he is getting there. And he will again, I wish everybody could be in my position to watch him work on it. He's usually always one of the first guys out and the last guys to leave. I appreciate that about him.
Let's squeeze one more in. Do you have a favorite highlight of the year?
Well, probably just the win against Oklahoma, yeah. just because it was so, you know, I don't want to put it in the same category of beating Oklahoma in football because that was such a special thing, especially when, I mean, it's been special the last 2 years in football, so unexpected here 2 years ago, and then winning in Norman. Are you kidding me? That was awesome. But this was one that, I mean, things were not good, man. And people thought, they're done. They're not going to win. And then you step up and beat the seventh-ranked team in the land. That's pretty good. So I guess that one is the first one that pops into mind.
I told John when it happened, I'll probably never forget it because I remember when I believe it was Rodney Magruder that did it. He hit three straight threes against Oklahoma his senior year. And then Mike McGurl, he hit the three straight threes his senior year against Oklahoma. And that won the game for K-State pretty much. I mean, they still had to play some basketball down the stretch last two and a half minutes. But that was an awesome moment. I will give this as well. Joe Petrakis hitting the three against Oklahoma State and outscoring Cade Cunningham. I love that.
Well, there's another guy that really doesn't get headlines. And I understand he's just a walk-on. Mm-hmm. But I really appreciate Joe because of his love of the game, his love of K-State, and the fact that he wants to be a part of this and work so hard at it. Not everybody can do that. You know, there are lots of guys out there that would like to have that opportunity and just can't quite get there. But he got the opportunity and took advantage of it, you know. And he's getting better. He's getting stronger. I don't know what you think, but the guy shoots the ball pretty well.
He does. He's a good shooter.
Yeah.
You weren't down on the floor this year, but I was.
Yeah.
And K-State warms up right in front of me. And I'm watching him warm up. And I almost call him like my spirit animal because while everybody's warming up, he's making a lot of noise, cheering guys on, challenging them to make shots.
That's exactly what he is.
And he knocks down his shots in warm-ups as well. He's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, he's gotten better defensively too. And again, I think this offseason will help him. I think he is more than capable of being somebody who could be an 8 to 10 minute a game guy next year off the bench because of what he brings to the table. He is a pretty good athlete. He's stronger than you think, needs to be stronger, but stronger than you think. The fact that he can, and he understands what they're doing on both ends of the floor, and that's really good.
A Big 12 tournament champion was crowned on Saturday. That's coming up next year on Wildcat Insider. Mitch and Wyatt Bank with you on Wildcat Insider News Radio KMAN. John Kurtz out for the day. Should be back tomorrow, but the voice of K-State soccer with the voice of the Wildcats.
There you go.
How about that? Even though not doing soccer right now. They're playing their spring schedule.
To the fall, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Back to a regular schedule, 9 non-con, 9 conference games.
Yeah.
Get to the, you know, traveling in the non-con again. That's some of the funnest parts of the whole season. Well, like we've mentioned before, the season for basketball for K-State has come to an end. The Big 12, 7 teams are going to still be playing with the NCAA tournament. But the way the Big 12 tournament wrapped up, Texas wins their first ever Big 12 tournament championship title. They had been there to the finals like 6 or 7 times, but had never won it. And I'll ask you this, Wyatt, because they got there because KU, part of it was KU had to opt out because of COVID in the semifinals. Before the tournament started, and if you had to pick somebody that wasn't Baylor to win it, would you have put Texas in that spot? I thought maybe they were a small surprise to win it, because actually I was going to probably pick Oklahoma State.
I would probably, if I'd be kidding you if I didn't say my choice in that scenario that you described wouldn't be Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, as I said earlier, they had just beaten West Virginia not once but twice and in Morgantown, right? And to me, they were the team that you almost saw more guys than you could even explain playing at a high level. I mean, just start naming them. I mean, you have to start with Cade Cunningham, but what they were getting with Ice coming back from injury, and Rondell Walker and Avery Anderson and Caleb Boone. And, I mean, you just go on and on and on with them. And so they would have been the choice. With that said, I have said all along that I really like Texas for this reason. Their three guards are veteran guys. They may not shoot it like the Baylor trio of starters, but when they're hot, they are quite good. They're pretty good defensively, too. And those big guys are really bouncy and can do a lot of different things. And it's Jericho Sims, it's Kai Jones, it's Greg Brown. I mean, they do have bodies and talent. So, to be honest with you, I'm not like in shock and awe that they won the game, and they got a break because KU had to opt out. There's no doubt about that. But the way they played, I mean, Matt Coleman had 30, and you saw what Jericho Sims did. Oh, my goodness. There was one point I was yelling at my television, and I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but I'm going, Fran, there's more than one guy playing here than Cade Cunningham.
Yep.
The guy's got 23 and 14. Talk about him once. Just once.
The NCAA tournament field is going to have 7 teams. I'm sure you're not shocked about that at all. It was projected the Big 12 would have 7 in there for quite some time. But I'll get your thought on this as well. I think this potentially could be one of the best showings the Big 12 has ever had in the NCAA tournament, because if you look at the field, 7 teams are in, and nobody's lower than an 8 seed.
Isn't that crazy?
That's pretty crazy.
You know, it's really interesting when you – and I haven't spent a lot of time at the bracket, but you think about, I mean, we knew Baylor was going to be a 1. We kind of felt like KU was going to be where they were, West Virginia where they were. You can argue that Oklahoma State maybe could have been a little bit higher.
Yeah, at 3 maybe.
You could maybe argue that Oklahoma was placed a little lower, but really for the most part, I think they did a pretty good job of seeding at this time from the Big 12 perspective, and frankly, all the way across. It's really, to me, and we won't spend a ton of time on this, but this may be the – mark this year down, Mitch, for so many reasons, but I think it's going to be a while before we see Michigan State and UCLA play in a play-in game again.
Yeah.
As one example.
How about those two blue bloods having to work their way into the field of 64
but,
there?
But you know what? That's what I like it because I think that's what this is. You know? I guess I would say you can always look at two or three teams and say they deserve to be in. I'll be honest, I was fearful going into the selection show that Wichita State wouldn't make it because of all of the upsets. I didn't think for 5 seconds that Oregon State would beat Colorado in the Pac-12 final, as an example, but they did. If I didn't really think Georgia Tech was going to win the ACC tournament, and they did. And we could go on and on, but you get the point. It's never easy with that selection crew. They did a good job.
To finish hour one, a Wildcat insider, going to get a quick update on the Batcats. They just played 4 games in 3 days in Houston. We finish hour one of Wildcat Insider coming up next. Back for one final time here in the first hour of Wildcat Insider. Mitch Fortner and the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson. I tell you what, Wyatt, baseball did have a slip up yesterday, a 1-0 loss and an unearned run for Rice to finish their road trip to Houston, Texas. But the Batcats before that have been a lot of fun to watch, scoring some runs. They got a couple of big wins against South Dakota State, and they had a 5-game winning streak in there. They are so much fun to watch right now.
Well, they are fun to watch. They're doing some good things. Is it perfect baseball? No. I think Pete Hughes would probably tell you we need to be better defensively. We need to have a little bit more timely hitting from time to time. At times, though, they've had some pretty good timely hitting. The pitching, though, to me has been the constant, especially from the starter's perspective. But I loved the way they won that first game against Northern Illinois on the trip. They're down in the late inning of the game, and Phillips gets a 2-run single, then steals 2 bases, and scores on a fielder's choice throw to win the ball game 4-3. So that's how the trip started. Now, they also won a doubleheader Saturday. Yesterday was the bummer part. They lost a 1-0 game and had a runner at third and less than 2 outs for sure twice that I can remember off the top of my head, and it didn't work out. But hey, 11-5 at this point, and you're right. Back to your point, it's a fun club to watch, and I think a team that is still improving, and we're getting closer to league play too.
Yeah, so that'll start a week from Friday against Oklahoma State, which K-State's first two Big 12 series will be against Oklahoma State and Texas Tech, who are right now probably, you could argue, the top two teams in the Big 12. So it gets tough right away, maybe a little bit easier down the stretch. But New Mexico comes into town this Friday for a 3-game set. If those that don't remember, K-State played New Mexico in Surprise, Arizona, in the third game of the year, and New Mexico walked off in the bottom of the ninth to stun K-State. So I'm sure there's a little bit of bad blood there, and K-State wants some revenge, but you're right. I mean, Dylan Phillips is hitting a ton right now. He has a batting average over 400. Zach Kokoska, he's been crushing the ball lately. Nick Goodwin is a freshman that needs to be talked about. He has been just right off the bat, just kind of stealing the show because he comes in as a true freshman. And he's earned an everyday spot, and he's hitting well.
Yeah, don't tell him, by the way, that this is harder than you're making it look. It's supposed to be harder, right? He's done a really nice job. A young man who can really hit. I love his approach at the plate. I suppose a lot of people would say, he'll swing it one out of the strike zone now and again, but he's been really good. And you mentioned Phillips and Kokoska. Both of those guys have been terrific, and you expect them to be really good.
Just the area that K-State has to improve on. I mean, improve everywhere, obviously. The bats need to be a little bit more consistent. But the errors in the infield have been an issue. Mm-hmm. 20 errors on the year right now for K-State. This is kind of the stat that sticks out to me, is K-State pitching has allowed 71 runs this year, but 46 of them are earned. So there's a lot of unearned runs in there, because I think what happens is the error takes place. It takes K-State a couple of batters to just find their groove again with the pitching as well. Kind of throws them out of their funk.
Well, think about this for starters. Casey Ford, game one of that trip, 1 earned run in 6 innings. Then they get Carson Seymour, no earned runs in 6 innings. Then you go to Jordan Wicks, 1 earned run in 6 1/3. And then you go to Connor McCullough, no earned runs in 6 1/3. That's pretty good.
I've been covering K-State baseball since 2014, the year after they won the Big 12. There's no doubt about it. It's some of the best pitching I've seen at K-State.
Yeah.
And I haven't been covering that long, I get it. But it's been phenomenal to watch those pitchers. And I've been saying, like, get out to Toyton Family Stadium and watch this core group of guys on the starting and on the mound starting for K-State do what they do, because there's a lot of major league arms out there right now for K-State.
Yeah, and knock on wood, the weather stays pretty decent. We've been blessed with pretty good weather here and on the road, too, for that matter. We had a little delay over the weekend in one spot, but not bad.
Sunny and 55 on Friday.
Perfect.
Should be a decent weekend.
Yeah.
Hour 2 Wildcat Insider is next.
News. The coronavirus. Sports.
And he is gone.
Weather.
Flood running in.